I've started a business in front of millions of people with no knowledge whatsoever, anything involved in that industry. You'd think that I'm going to make some mistakes, right?
Hello and welcome once again to another episode of the Jiu-Jitsu Jabber podcast. So we're starting to stack up on the celebrities at this point. On today's episode, our guest is a well-recognized Discovery Channel personality. Having spent 14 years in the military as a Green Beret and Special Forces medic, our guest has survived unimaginable circumstances in places very few people would even dare to visit. He's best known for being a gold miner on the TV show Gold Rush, a series with 12 seasons that follows a group of gold miners through all the challenges of what it takes to mine for gold. Please welcome Mr. Fred Lewis. Hey, Fred, how are you doing?
Hey, how's it going, brother? Thanks for having me.
So, Fred, you know, obviously your biggest claim to fame is on the TV show Gold Rush, but my interest kind of peaked with you when I heard that you had a little bit of a history of grappling. You're a former Green Beret, a former Special Forces medic. Tell us a little bit about the background there, if you would.
Yeah. So I, in high school, I was a wrestler as well. I actually joined the Army in 1990, I think it was 96, as a wrestler. So that was my first intent, was to wrestle. And some injuries kind of forced my hand to become the intel analyst that I became. I joined the Army after the injuries as a Korean linguist. Spent 7 years intercepting North Korean comms, which is not as exciting as it sounds. Then after 9/11, I just knew I wanted to see a fight. I didn't want to sit in a tunnel anymore and listen to someone's conversations. So I went to the Q course, became a Green Beret, and ended up in Germany at the 1st of the 10th Special Forces battalion there, and did tours in Iraq, Afghanistan, a lot of Northern African countries. We were in and out of either fighting terror cells or trying to combat through education to help countries protect themselves from terror cells, Morocco, Niger, Tunisia, Mali, Timbuktu, a lot of places like that, places you don't really want to go visit. They're not really nice, but a lot of great memories from that time in my service. Then I got out and realized I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. I found fitness, started working out a lot, and got the call to go and join Parker, and the rest is history. I was hired to help Parker because of my background in the military, but gold mining just piqued my interest and I wanted a little piece of it.
Yeah. And so you had mentioned to me before that you have some wrestling experience from high school, and then sort of presumably brought some of that grappling base to your training in the Green Berets. What kind of grappling training do Green Berets do?
Well, we actually have our own system. I can't give away specifics about it, but it's based off of the Gracies. The Gracies have a fighting technique, and they basically turned it into kill moves instead of grappling moves. So we go through this the entire time we're in the qualification course. At some points it's every day, and it's just scenarios where someone comes at you with a knife, someone comes at you with a pistol, someone gets a rear choke on you, someone gets a front choke on you. It's ways to quickly disable them. So it's more along the lines of murder than grappling, but it's got a grappling background.
Yeah. That's interesting. You mentioned the Gracies. So I guess without getting into too much detail, there is sort of fighting off of your back and that kind of thing, as opposed to wrestling, which is more sort of painting people.
Yep, exactly. It was unique to learn, you know, what we were taught in the Q course, and then to compare it to actual grappling. It's like, oh, I can definitely see the connections here. What we learned in the military and in SF was for a purpose. If you get caught behind the wrong door and you don't have a weapon, you're going to have to know how to use your hands and your feet and your head, whatever you have to use. So it's, it's really fun. I ended up actually getting kicked in the face so hard that it fractured my Lafort, which is where your nose and your mouth are connected. Lost my sense of smell for 2 years. I was unconscious 33 minutes. It was in front of everybody. It was during one of our tests, techniques, and my partner did the wrong sequence, so I wasn't able to block it fast enough. Yeah, they said it was like someone was punting a football. So yeah, it works.
Clearly, we had a gentleman, Greg Simons, on the show before. He was a former SEAL, and he kind of made an interesting comment at one point that if a SEAL finds himself in a sort of a physical altercation, then something has gone pretty wrong in the sense that they utilize weapons a lot more than they do. So that's a little bit different for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was a last resort training for us, but in special forces compared to the SEALs, I'm not a big SEAL fan, but we use our brains a lot more. We don't use a lot of weapons. So if we get in an altercation, it's because somebody's trying to kill us. And at that point, our only response is going to be to kill back. But we're the silent professionals, and we like to solve problems with our brains first. We have different mannerisms in the military. We serve different roles, and I appreciate the roles the Green Berets fill a lot more than the roles that SEALs fill. And I also feel like being quiet professionals is key to being who we are. I don't know if you noticed the difference in Navy SEAL movies out there, but I just don't feel like they can keep their mouth shut.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty hardcore. You essentially took a round to your helmet, I think 2009, and then retired, and then eventually found yourself as a medic in Papua New Guinea, was it?
Correct. Yeah. The time period when I received the round to my helmet was the time period where we weren't really paying attention as much as we should have to traumatic brain injuries. And I mentioned the kick to the face. That was probably 3 years prior. And then there were several other concussions I had in training and in schools. And then in combat, 2 weeks before that helmet shot, I actually was in a near blast with a team of Navy SEALs that was a really bad concussion as well. And it was just the... no, it was actually my guy's fault, not theirs. So okay. I won't point that out. But it was just that concussion after concussion after concussion that finally when it got to that round I took to the helmet, which to me wasn't the worst concussion I've had by far, but it was because I'd had so many, and that last one was a pretty big one, the blast injury, that it just pushed my brain over the threshold. I lost probably a month of memory from that firefight to when I took the round. After that, in combat, I don't remember any of it. I actually went to doctors for sleep problems, migraines. I don't remember any of it. The day after that firefight, the French president flew out and awarded us all, I forgot what it's called in France, but it's equivalent to their Bronze Star. We were the first Americans to get it for like 30 or 40 years. I don't remember any of it. I've seen pictures. We had a big party with the French soldiers that we were involved in that big fight with. They lost 10 soldiers and had 32 injured. And I was one of the only medics. I don't remember any of that either. Only the stories I've been told. So it was just one too many concussions. And then everything went downhill. And I realized when I got back from combat that I just needed to get out because I couldn't focus on anything. And seizures, migraines, all kind of just started happening because I was taking so many pills. I'd had part of my clavicle removed. So I was on tramadol, which turned into morphine. And it was just stockpiling. So I knew that if I kept going, I'd end up dead.
So do you still have any effects of that? Are you able to sleep now, for example?
No, I've had insomnia since 2009, since I took that round. I sleep 2 to 3 hours a night, but I've adapted to it. It doesn't harm me. It's just I don't sleep. I don't dream. I haven't had a dream in like 10 years. I avoid the things that cause seizures. I don't drink heavy alcohol. I don't drugs. I don't do anything that lowers the seizure threshold. I stay away from strobe lights. That's a bad one. And I eat healthy and exercise. And to me, it's gotten rid of the migraines. I stopped taking medication altogether. I don't take any medication at all, including medication for seizures. I found that my mind's clearer and I feel less pain and anxiety and bull crap when I'm not taking any meds. So it's been almost 8 years since I've taken a pill, including like a Tylenol. I don't even take Tylenol. I just decided to go clean. And for me, it's helped. It hasn't stopped my problems. It's just enabled me to focus on it more and to live around them.
So you were basically forced into retirement after a series of these crazy incidents. And then this was, I guess, the sort of transition. You met Parker and worked with him a little bit on the television series. I guess, just while it came to me as a kind of an aside, how did COVID affect you personally or in filming or anything like that?
You know, I feel like my wife and I benefited from COVID, to be honest. I was about to go up to the Yukon to work for Parker on season 11, and the border got closed and he was only able to get his key guys up there. Obviously, I'm the new guy, just kind of his buddy. I wasn't on the list. So I was looking around, and through the grapevine, I heard they were looking for another team. possible mining team on the show. And I was like, well, heck, if I'm stuck down here, I can find a mine here in the lower 48, pitched it. They picked us and the rest is history. So for us, COVID is the reason we exist as the reason the misfits exist is because of COVID. Of course, we've earned the spot we're in now by fighting for it and struggling and trying to do better. But COVID has made filming a lot harder. I've quarantined 33 days last year alone for filming. Wow. And we have to get, you know, there's vaccination requirements for some stuff that, and pretty much just means I have to be vaccinated, which I don't really care. I was in the military. I got anthrax vaccinations 3 times. If I could survive that, I could survive anything. So it's annoying. Traveling to Canada last year was really hard because of their COVID restrictions, but I'm hearing through the grapevine that on April 1st that was lifted. So I got a guy going through tomorrow. I'll tell you how that goes. But yeah. I would say we've found a way to make COVID work for us, and we're just glad that it's almost over.
Did you have any problems with guys pushing back against vaccinations or anything like that? Not to name names.
Yep. Yeah, I lost a guy this season because he wouldn't get vaccinated. It's not like he's gone forever, but while there is a vaccine requirement, he's not playing ball. And I can't judge on that, why we have freedom. I guess from me being in the military for so long, right from high school, and just I was indoctrinated in that system, and I appreciated it. I liked the fact that our medical was taken care of and that our rent was taken care of and that we were severely pampered in our lives. So when I'm out here in the real world as a civilian and someone says, well, if you don't get the vaccine, you're not going to be able to cross the border. I'm like, all right, let's just get the vaccine. Done deal. I mean, I'm going to do what I need to do, what the government's telling me to do so I can play ball, because that's how I was indoctrinated. So I guess some people look at it as an infringement. It's just the fact of the matter. It's just how we live today. And for me, I'm not going to pass an opportunity because of a rule. I'm still running a 430 mile and I'm fully vaccinated. So it's not hurting me any. I mean, I've never felt better than I feel right now. So, I mean, vaccines can be allergic. Anybody can be allergic to any vaccine or have an adverse reaction to it. So, I don't know. I also don't live life that way. I live my life very like, just go for it and see what happens. I don't have plans. I always just kind of go off of plans and I'm bouncing around. So for me to be concerned about the future from a little shot in my arm.
I realize that a big driver behind your involvement on the television series was sort of helping veterans. I was just wondering, how did you go about finding these guys to come and come on the show with you? I know you've got some struggles keeping some of the guys with you. There's got to be a bit of a challenge there. I'm sure you're friends with some of these guys, obviously. I know you are from watching your show, but wanted to hear a little bit about that.
Well, honestly, Stuart, one of the guys that's on the team with me, him and I started a nonprofit probably 2011. This has always kind of been our plan. The broader spectrum that I'm talking about, not gold mining. It's never been part of the plan, but finding a way to bring in a group of vets, to repurpose them as leaders and role models to then invest in veterans. That's always been our plan. The nonprofit was called Vetscape, and I've actually started it back up because I know we're going in the same directions as we were trying to go before. And the whole point was to bring vets out to a central location and just kind of get them into the mindset of, okay, you're out of the military now, you're about to transition, what are you going to do? These are some things you need to avoid. These are some connections we can hook guys up with, educational benefits, and like point them in the right direction, right? It's what they used to do back in the Polynesian days after they had combat. A lot of Native Americans used to do it. A lot of Native American cultures, they would bring in their warriors and kind of repurpose them and help them get guidance to where they were going to go next. Nobody else does that anymore. I don't know why. So that was kind of the reason we were trying to do it. So gold mining, when I started working for Parker and I felt the drive I had inside of me to learn how to mine and to do it, I'm like, man, this could be something that could not only be financially beneficial, but it could also work for our plant. And it just kind of fell into place. So I'd already had a couple guys in mind. Guys that I knew would benefit from it. Johnny is part of my biggest hero, two Purple Heart, who couldn't love the guy. So he was on my list. I knew it would be challenging though, because not everybody's a gold miner and not everybody wants to slave around and work 16 hour days for, you know, sometimes 7 days a week for months on end. So that whole I guess my fallback's always been that everybody I've selected has served in the military. So they at least know when going gets tough, you push harder, you don't go back, right? That was my big reasoning for wanting to keep this to vets. And I would say it's working 100%. I hired two people last season without knowing them, just from people that are watching the show and sending me resumes. And they both worked out fantastically. Because we're able to find out before we hire someone why they want to have the job and what they're trying to get out of it and what their overall goal is. As long as we can fit somebody that matches our overall goal, I mean, military is military.
Right.
I mean, I can't imagine us finding somebody that would be so far off that they wouldn't fit in.
Sure. Are they all military? These people that you're accepting are into the Misfits? Are they
everybody except for Buzz? Buzz was our acquire last season. I hired him to help build cabins, and he ended up having a ton of knowledge in mining and in heavy equipment. So I ended up bringing him on, and I'm not against hiring civilians at all. I'm looking at this season. I can't give away things, but I'm looking at possibly acquiring Canadian citizens to come work with us that are begging me to come and help because they see the show and they're like, we are right down the road. We can totally help you guys. We don't want any money. We just want to work with the guys. Same pay as everybody else, blah, blah, blah. You know, I get hundreds of resumes from people that want to help. So I feel like once we get this key mining team established and we're actually putting successful seasons behind us, you know, last season was 110 ounces. It kind of just pays the bills. It's not, I don't see it as successful. 500 ounces, I think then we can start saying we're succeeding. Then the next phase of the program will kick in, which is investing. And that's when I'll take 5% of the goal we find every season and invest it into a veteran that wants to start a business. Kind of like Shark Tank, but we're just going to say, put out a post on Instagram. We're going to invest in a company. Tell us why it should be you. And then we'll just go through and find out which veteran is the most likely to succeed with the investment and has a good idea, and we'll invest in them. And we want to do that every year. So, you know, this is only phase one.
Yeah, I love how you've got multiple layers to business layers to this idea. You're not just staying in one place. You're branching out and thinking bigger than Gold Rush even, and trying to come up with different ideas on your own. I think that's amazing. You mentioned Stuart McKenzie, a friend of yours, and you know, another seemingly kind of authentic, altruistic, kind of a humble guy from again, I'm just watching from the show perspective. But I think you can pick up on subtleties of who people are because they're reacting in stressful situations, which of course all of your team, you know, are capable of.
Yeah, and it comes off real on TV, but there's a lot of times where they're like, we need you guys to be more concerned. And we're like, why? No one's shooting at us. Like, what am I gonna, like, we're fine.
So do they do that? Do the producers try and like push you for a little bit of more emotion or whatever?
Yeah, it's a big thing. It's a big thing between my team and the production company because we wholeheartedly want people to, we understand emotions sell. Totally get that. I want the viewer to connect to my emotions. However, and this is no put down, I would compare most veterans that have seen some heavy combat or at least been in the military for a long enough period of time to someone with almost like Asperger's. The trauma that we have, and I'm not saying that it's trauma necessarily, but just being around traumatic events does something to your emotions where it's really hard to portray them because you're taught, okay, I just saw someone get murdered right there, but I have to keep going forward because my buddy could be the next one. You don't show that emotion, you keep going. And that's part of the training daily basis. You don't get it back. So when they're asking us, you know, show us the emotion you feel for this big gold way, it's not the fact that we don't want to look silly. It's not the fact that we aren't happy. It's the fact that our bodies don't know how to show that anymore. So we're trying to explain to them, and they think we're being stubborn, I think, sometimes. And we're like, no, honestly, I don't know how that feels. I don't know how that feels. I don't have that emotion. Like, I don't. Yay, I'm happy we have a lot of gold inside. I'm feeling it, but it's one of the most complicated things that we're dealing with because we want our stories to be told correctly and we want people to understand how we feel. It's really hard to understand how I feel if I'm like, yeah, that was bad. Like that's how I am. But that doesn't tell the story. So that's a big struggle for all of us.
It's kind of funny.
You didn't think about
it's
it.
Funny enough.
You didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about a soldier coming from a very stressful combat situation and then finding themselves in the grocery store picking out cereal, it's a ridiculous divide, and your brain has to do something to handle it. I mean, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it's something that never goes away, because I haven't been in combat for 13 years almost. And I'll still drive by the road and a piece of trash will blow across the road and I'll still be ready for combat. I was the lead driver in my convoy, and that was something that I, on a daily basis, and it still kicks in. I don't know why. It's not like I'm thinking about it. It's just there. And I think that there's just certain parts you just don't turn off. And I think turning off your emotions for those types of things, it's super hard to get them back. That's a common thing I feel with people I talk to. They'll be like, I cry at really weird moments. And that's me. Like, I'll cry on like a stupid TV show, or like a cooking show, if some kid has a sad story, but I could watch somebody get in a car accident, I'd be fine with it. You know, it's those types of things that we deal with. It's hard to explain to. Yeah. It's just all messed up. It's hard on TV. Yeah. Yeah.
It's rewired. You have to kind of rewire yourself in a way, I guess. Now, you have a master's degree in education. You have a bachelor's degree as well, obviously. But I know you struggled a little bit in terms of finding your path. You were a biology teacher, ironically, some web development too, which is, you know, what my own company, Basebuild, does. Just that's, you know, an ironic match there. You were a history teacher. But you also managed to spend a lot of time with the high school wrestling and coaching of that.
Wrestling was something I knew I always wanted to coach. As soon as I got out, I went right to the high school my wife was teaching at in Hanford, or actually that time that was in Hope County, North Carolina, or outside Fort Bragg. So when I was teaching medicine at the Special Forces, the same school I went through, I became an instructor as a civilian there. While I was teaching there, I was coaching wrestling at the high school. And it, to me, I just always knew I would coach right from high school. And the first opportunity I had, I did it. Then when we moved here, my wife taught at this high school. I immediately went there and got a job coaching there. Parker's Trail kind of put a kibosh on that, because it's right during the wrestling season. And now with mining, I get back in October and wrestling starts right up. I have a lot less time to do it, but I still talk to him. I'm getting my daughter to wrestle next year. So I'll be right back at coaching again, because I'm not letting her wrestle without me coaching.
Do you feel like with these new endeavors with mining, and I know you're working through some mining issues and learning that trade and learning and then growing all these different sort of, like we said, business layers. Do you find like you're finding your feet more in terms of this post-military career, for want of a better term?
Yeah. I feel like I tried everything, and I'm definitely not the kind of person that would give up a good job. Everything I've done, I've enjoyed, but I knew it wasn't me. But yeah. I feel really at home as a business owner with the ability to kind of think out my own future and move a company from zero to where I want it to go. I kind of feel like that ownership is something I kind of needed. And it's just the challenge. I was just talking to Kara, my wife, yesterday about this. We're looking at buying a dozer. It's a big thing we need to buy this season. And just that one task can be broken down into like four different subtasks, like from my Intel analyst, but how my brain works. You know, you've got to find the dozer. You've got to go and look at the dozer. You've got to purchase it. Then you got to figure out how to ship it. And once it gets shipped, you have to figure out how to receive it. And some of these funds I don't have until probably mid-June. So I've got to figure out ways to get these people to work with me in future payments. So these are all kind of problems you have to solve. And that's just a dozer. I mean, we've got wash plant, we've got troop movements, all the orders they need, their quarantine orders, making sure they're all, you know, these types of things are why I think I love it so much. Because it's not an easy show up, get in the dozer and work. I wish it was like that. But actually, I don't, because then it wouldn't have all the intricacies that keep my brain moving. So that, I think that's the fit right there. I'm the kind of person that needs things moving all over the place. I can't have a desk job where I'm just like,
yeah,
can't do it.
One thing.
I tried. It's why teaching didn't get me. As much as I enjoyed helping the kids, it's the same thing over and over again. And it's not me.
Interestingly, throughout watching some of the different seasons, whatever, different episodes, things would happen. Challenges would come up. And your reaction was sort of unusually calm or unusually stoic, where I don't want to go talk to these landowners and knowing that there's this huge risk or the, you know, it's a big deal, right? But you seem to just take it. That's military training, or that is that you personally?
Yeah, I think I've always been like that. I was captain of all my sports teams in high school from my sophomore year. Like after my freshman year, everybody's like, all right, you're going to be the captain of the wrestling. I was captain of all three sports I did. I've always been the kind of person that would rather lead from the front than follow from behind. And I've always been really humble about making mistakes. That's one thing about me. If I make a mistake, I'll eat it. And I'll eat it right in front of everybody. I don't care, because that's part of learning. So as far as mining goes, I'll make those decisions. If I feel confident enough about it, I take a lot of risks. I just feel like we have one life to live, and I don't want to look back and say, you know what, I could have done that, but I didn't because I was scared. If it's scary, it means it's going to be worth something, man. And if you fail at it, it doesn't mean it's over. It just means you got to regroup and figure out a way, or if it's worth it to go back at it again. Like mining, we failed the first season. I won't deny that in any. I won't even make excuses for it. I mean, there are plenty of excuses and plenty of ways I could push the blame, but I'm the leader and I take it. But that gave us fuel as a team to not do that again. And we're doing it again this year from last season. And I feel like you got to take risks. I mean, there's so many risks. If my wife was sitting by my side running this business, like she really wishes she could, but she teaches so she can't, she'd be terrified.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. You know, you gotta spend money to make money, and you got to take risks to separate yourself from everybody else. I don't know if it's stoicism or if it's just the ability to hide my fear.
Or just madness.
Yeah. It could be. Very well, it could be. But I have told a lot of people I am overconfident in life. I'm always overconfident, but I haven't failed very much. I mean, I've done some pretty cool stuff in my life, and the only reason I've done it is because I've been committed to it. Like anybody can make it to the Q course in Special Forces and become a Green Beret if they want it and they don't quit. Those are the only two things, unless you have an accident and break something, but that means you can come back. So in my mind, nothing I've done is extraordinary. I just really wanted all of it.
I don't know about that. I mean, you've done some, you know, mud runs, Spartan races. You know, you were, I think, at one point on American Ninja Warrior. Like, how did you even qualify for that?
I just wanted it. I made the video. I sold it to them, showed them on the video that you submit that I was into it and I wanted to do it. And I have a good story. My life is gone a lot of weird ways because of that philosophy. And I've been like this since I was a kid. I convinced my parents when I was 16 to give up a state championship in wrestling. I was the number one seed in my weight class, runner up the 2 years before. And I was like, I want to go to Norway and be an exchange student. And they're like, are you crazy? And I'm like, no, maybe I am. But I gave it up. I was, I think, fourth or fifth in cross country. I was a decent runner too. I didn't want any of that. I just wanted to go to Norway to learn Norwegian. I don't know. I don't remember why. I've always been like that. We're just go for stuff. And I loved Norway. And I speak four languages now because I was a young kid, decided I wanted to learn languages. I don't know. Just how I have been my whole life. If I see something I want, I'm going to get it.
So are you fluent? Are you're communicative, I guess, in four languages? What are those?
I'm fluent in Norwegian. My son still lives in Norway. I have a son that lives in Trondheim, so I'm fluent in Norwegian. My Korean, I could probably understand a Korean. It would take me a little bit of time to get refreshed on that. And same with German. Just a little bit of brushing up on that. I used to be able to speak Danish and Swedish too, but they're so similar to Norwegian. I guess my brain kind of gave up on those and just held on to the Norwegian so I could still converse with Swedes and Danes. So I don't know. Yeah. But language has always been something I'm fascinated with. And I think that's why I was an Intel analyst and a code breaker. Like my mind works those ways. I mean, I used to be able to intercept Morse code while I was listening to people speak at the same time. And it was just one of those things where my brain works that way. I don't know.
How do you stay fit now? Like, does the show keep you, do you have to like do any kind of training or weights or anything in the trailer, et cetera?
No, we tried. Me and Stuart, if you notice Stuart, if you watch Stuart episode 1 versus episode 22, he's probably 40 pounds down. We just don't have the time. It's not, we work so much. Our body burns so many calories just doing our job. to add weightlifting to try and build muscle on top of that, it just wouldn't work. So both of us do the same thing. We bulk up during the off season. We work out as much as we possibly can from November to April. And then we kind of just ride it out during the mining season. We've tried it. I guess you could do it. It's just exhausting. Like your body, when you get done with a 12-hour shift sitting in a excavator or a rock truck, your body just needs to relax. It doesn't need to pump. Yeah. I'll probably lose 20 pounds of muscle. And this year I didn't even try to get my muscle back because I'm running at the Invictus Games. So I wanted to be small. So I kind of used that as a bonus to shred the bulk, but it's going to hurt me during the off season, obviously. So no, it's tough. So, TV is tough. So this is a full commitment.
What is the, I guess, typical downtime on the set? When you guys aren't filming, what are you doing?
So, well, we changed our schedule up this year. Last year we went 12 days on, 2 days off. So we worked 12 straight days, 12-hour shifts. I run a night shift and a day shift, midnight to noon and noon to midnight. And that's kind of gives, it's two pronged. First off, it keeps our plant running 24 hours a day, but it also gives the camera crews equal exposure to both teams. So they're not trying to cram in. It like gives my guys equal exposure because I want all my guys' stories to be told, right? It just works better. So we run that the whole season. This year, we're going to go and work we're going to take Sundays off and work 6 days on, 1 day off, just to see how it compares to 12 and two. I didn't think that 1 day off was enough. I felt like, if I'm going to get a day off, I want two, because you can burn one, you can go drink, you can get a hangover. I don't drink, but some of these guys do. And then have that full day of recovery, or you could hit a really good workout and have another day to recover. I feel like if you take 1 day off and go right back to that 6 day murder, I don't think it's going to be enough, but the guys wanted to try it. So we're going to try it this year. I don't know. The basic formula I use is based on 26 days a month. If I can get 26 days a month of operation, the fuel costs are gonna match up with my gold revenue, which is kind of how it goes. You got to balance to make sure you're not, because if you work too much or too little, it's weird. It kind of goes like the profit graph kind of goes like this. You think the more you work, the more you're gonna get, but that's not the case.
Does the Discovery Channel help you guys financially, or is everything on your back kind of thing?
It's all on us. We obviously get paid for our episodic fees, but it's nowhere near what people think. Maybe some of the big stars out there are getting big money, but we're just peons at this point. So, and that's fine. We're not there to be TV stars. We're there to tell our story, and we're here to help vets. If they can help support that while we pull in enough gold to make it a real viable business, it's great. But eventually I'd rather be to the point where our gold mining is really what legitimately is pulling all of this.
You kind of touched on Parker there a while ago. Again, how did you get on generally? Like, what is it like working with Rick Ness, Parker Schnabel, like these different people? I know at one point you mentioned Tony's kind of a pretty cool guy.
Yeah. I've worked with all of them. I haven't worked with Rick very much, but he seems like down to earth. Not TV's not in his head. I would probably definitely hang out with him. Parker's was obviously a great friend. He pulled me into this business. He taught me how to gold mine, and he's facilitated me in becoming who I am right now. So no problems with him at all. I'd say our political beliefs are a little different, and the way we look at life is a little different. So we're probably not going to be best of buddies, but we'll work together just fine. And I consider him a good friend. Tony, I love Tony. I love Tony Mini. I love all the beats. Like, for me, that's the most real family in all of this. Besides us, of course. and they're just fantastic to work with. Tony actually doesn't blow smoke. He actually has taught me quite a bit the times we've been together. We've worked on some filming things together. And off camera, he's always helping me out and with advice and just talking like a normal person. So to me, I had the most connection with the beats. If I were to pick an ally, it'd probably be Tony. But no bad blood of me and anybody else on the show. I feel like we're just a little different. Our team's not out here to put in 10,000 ounces. We're not out here to look cool by big piles of gold. We're out here to look cool by repurposing people and shedding light on a problem we have as a society, which is not helping our veterans. And I feel like between the guys we have on the show and the investments we start to make in the next couple of years, that statement alone is going to be worth its weight in gold to us.
What are your thoughts on Todd coming back on the show again?
I don't know, man. That's tough because I respect Todd a lot for what he created here that I'm now involved in. So I definitely can't say anything bad about the guy. Like, he's the godfather of Gold Rush. Whether or not he minds like me or he talks or acts like me, that's a moot point. But when he comes back, he kind of liked the competition at this point. So it's tricky because he's not on our show. He's on a different show. So I'm like, oh, is he going to pull ratings? Like, I don't know. It's interesting. I've never been in this situation before where, like, the big dog comes back. You'd think it would be better if he was on our show, right? Because then he'd be helping our ratings. But then he gets his own show and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
This could get interesting. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the more mining shows I have to watch, the more I'm going to learn, because that's how I learn a lot of my stuff. I've got manuals, and I'm reading the IRS manual on placer mining so that I can know how they work for taxes. So I'm like, that's the intel analyst in me. I'll pick things apart and learn the best way to run. So for me, it's great. I can see him make mistakes or not make mistakes. I can learn from that stuff. Just don't take my ratings.
Now, one thing, you know, you and I chatted about in the past was these kind of crazy online reviews. And, you know, I find it really hard to understand why people think it's okay. I guess they're, you know, keyboard warriors. They're leaving nasty comments on forums without ever sort of really understanding or thinking about the ramifications. And I often kind of think to myself when I see these are just young people not really thinking this stuff through. Where do you think that kind of negativity comes from?
I don't know, but it's definitely not young people. I get messages mostly from older males. I would say 90% of the hate mail or constructive criticism I get is from 55 and up male. I get very few from females, but they're all older females too. Younger guys never come at me on it personally. Now online, on like thread count, yeah, it's pretty much everybody coming at me. But as far as the personal, like, message my inbox and try and get to me, it's usually the same type of person that does that. And it's someone that thinks they have more experience. They think that they deserve the opportunity more. And then when I break it, I'm an idiot because I respond to most of these guys and like, no, you're wrong. This is why you're wrong. And this is why I feel like you should look differently. And most of the guys are like, oh, I'm so sorry. Some of them are just douchebags trying to be dicks. And I don't know. I'm always told not to read any of that stuff, but at the same time, I like defending our honor. And I don't want rumors to be thrown out there that people believe. Like, Frank gets 20,000 an episode. Yeah, bullshit. My wife's like, just don't read it. And I'm like, yeah, I gotta at least respond to the really far out ones and not let those things grow into big plants. But this definitely is not something I would ever do as a person. I never will go online and comment to a real person about what they're doing because it's just not my business. So I don't get it. Like, I've started a business in front of millions of people with no knowledge whatsoever, anything involved in that industry. You'd think that I'm going to make some mistakes, right? Like, no one's teaching me this. No one's holding my hand saying, you should rent this piece of equipment. You should talk to this guy. This is all me on the fly. And nobody else on my team is able to help me because I'm usually the only one on the ground. I kind of understand why anybody cares if I make a mistake. It's almost inevitable. I'm going to. I mean, it would be fake if I went and did perfectly and knew what I was talking about. It would be fake because that doesn't exist.
For any of those negative comments, there's a ton of people that think you're great and think that the team is great and the whole push to support the veterans. So let me just say that for all of those people that do support you, screw the negative comments and you know, keep on keeping on, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I get messages. I wish I could read a few of my. It would take me too long to find them, but I get messages almost every day from vets just saying, I'm not looking for a job. I just wanted to say I'm proud of you. You're setting a good example. One guy asked me to call him just to hear his story. I called him. He told me he just wanted to have reassurance that he was thinking things that normal guys like us are thinking. But that means what we're doing is working because he watched a TV show. He heard me say we're doing this to help vets enough to reach out to me. And then I ended up talking to him on the phone and hopefully helping clear his mind on some things and realize that, you know, it doesn't matter what we did in the military, we all have problems. And I think that I could give two shits about anything else when even if I got just that one message. But I get those a lot. I have wives asking me to reach out to their husbands. I have people just messaging me that I know need to talk a little bit, and it's constant, and it's exactly why I'm doing this. So that's why I say I have an open door policy. If you can find my DM, you're welcome in it.
Yeah. And you're bringing to the forefront the challenges that these veterans have. I train with veterans in our gym here in Salt Lake. I know these guys. I know their backgrounds. If you did anything else with Gold Rush, the fact that you're bringing this to the forefront, the challenges these guys and girls have coming back into society, that in itself is hugely worth it. So you're truly are doing some great work.
Yeah, and I've actually had some pushback at first from production and from the network when I would say frequently it's not about the gold, and they're like, well, you're on Gold Rush, it has to be about the gold. So I had to kind of reword it is about the gold, because gold is essential for this to work.
Of course,
and without a successful mining operation, I can't. But it's not about the gold. Even though I'm not really saying anything differently, it's just the way I say it. Like, it is about the gold, but it's not. It's about these connections, and it's about shedding light and setting an example. Because if I, as a lonely, disabled vet, can start a business that will invest in veterans for the next 10 years, anybody can do it. And a big company that already exists can start thinking, well, how can I invest in veterans? Because if this little guy isn't giving away, it's giving away 5%. Of everything he earns, why aren't those bigger companies doing at least what I'm doing? Like, I'm hoping to kind of wake people up here. Like, there's a way to take care of people, the village to raise a child. I mean, it's not just about having a veteran go on a ski trip and talk to other veterans. That's great. And it's great to get those types of things out there, but it's not solving anything.
Right.
It's putting a band-aid
on. Going on vacation isn't, or sitting around chatting about it is different from blood, sweat, and tears together. I completely understand what you
mean. And things that are going to change your life. I remember when I first got out, I got my degree in agriculture and started realizing there was a good possibility I could make a living on a farm. The reason I'm not farming today is because I couldn't find an investor to believe in my business plan. I couldn't find a bank to sign off on what I had. And I can tell you right now, I was involved in the first hemp project in Kentucky with Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul. My family was the first to do that. If I had an investor that believed in me, I'd be making money on a farm right now, and I'd have a great successful business. And that's kind of what made me realize this needs to change. How the hell does a guy with 20 years in the Army build credit enough to get a small business loan? He probably hasn't in most scenarios like me. So if we can set it up where, you know, businesses see there's ways we can do this without anybody, that's what I want to do. Even if I only help two or three vets start businesses and don't get anything out of it myself, I that's just what I want to do.
You've achieved something, yeah. Can you give us any insiders into season 13? Any nuggets of things that we should look forward to?
I can tell you that the same crew's not coming back, and that we may see some old faces. Not 100% sure on that. This is all stuff that's happening right now. And you'll probably see some new faces. So it's going to be, I'm trying not to give much away. I am focused a hell of a lot more right now on building skill and filling positions with actual mining experience and heavy equipment experience this year. Same place. We're going to be in the same place. I can give you that much too.
If you ever come to Salt Lake, I would love for you to come and hang out and roll with us maybe a little bit, check out the jiu-jitsu, show us some great place stuff that you can show.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. You know, my wife was just down in Utah for a cheer competition.
Thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate you spending your time. I know you're busy.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for letting me tell my story and for getting this out to people that might help. Misfitsmining.com is our website. We have a way you can connect with us there. It connects directly to my email. And also we sell our hats on that website. We're going to be working on hopefully some more merch, t-shirts and sweatshirts. Hopefully trying to work something with Grunt Style. Official Fred Lewis is my Instagram. And that's the best way to find me.
Awesome, Fred. Thank you, brother. I really appreciate it.
Take care.